This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Your explanation. It's pretty bleeping simple. And then he goes, all right, thanks, and walks off.
It might also be genius, right? There's no league to fine him.
I know. He can't get fined.
Smart.
Now, I'll say this. Note this in your calendars. They go to Syracuse November 23rd.
You think they're not going to get any calls?
I don't think they're going to get many calls in that one. I just sent you the play, by the way. Ross Tucker, who was on the call, goes, that's pass interference. You have to call that.
The other just college football moment. I mean, I always tell the story of my college roommate was from about like 2 hours north of L.A., and so he's never watched college football a day in his life until he meets me and my buddy that are from the South. And so he first starts watching SEC football, and he's like, is the officiating always this bad? And he's coming to it not from the perspective of Alabama gets all the calls or, you know, there's always a conspiracy. He's just watching, and he's like, it's just terrible. Like, it's horrible. Like, he was just getting – and then he turned it into his gimmick was every Halloween he was just a blind ref, and he put an SEC patch on his shirt. And he's like – he knew nothing about SEC football 7 months before meeting us. And then so he's just gotten into it. I think they might have had their Mona Lisa on Saturday when they basically have a game stoppage for the field just getting littered with trash and bottles and whatnot. And they use that as the opportunity to look at the video board and see the replays like, oh, man, we missed that. We got to go back and call it. They were painting. I mean, they were – this was – as good as it gets, but then you have to top it off. I got to also give the SEC credit. Rather than addressing the problem they've had for decades, they just fined Texas $250,000. They wag their finger at Texas. They're like, that's not how it's going to be. And they just completely changed the story. No one's actually talking about the officiating. Everyone's talking about how Texas is now having to go through video footage to find kids and take away their tickets for a year.
Are they really thinking about banning alcohol now, too? Didn't I see
that? That was the classic, you know, like when you got your, maybe this is a me problem. You know when you got maybe like your third speeding ticket when you first learned to drive and your parents are like, I'm taking the car away? They can take the car away. They bought it. It's theirs. That's kind of what the SEC did, which is like, we're not going to do this, but just so you know, if we wanted to, we could.
Got it.
And also, it's like, it kind of sets the tone for Texas has always kind of run the place, and now they don't. And this is kind of another lesson of, hey, you're not just going to always get exactly what you want. Brady Cook going from the hospital to leading the fourth quarter comeback. Like, that's, like, there's no way he plays in the NFL, right?
No.
That's only a college football story. Like, hey, he's good. He's good. Get back in there. He's ready to go. Where I was right, trusting that my instinct that Texas was better, which led me to, no, Georgia's the obvious play here, and taking Georgia, that's what I'm going to stick with. That's where I was right. I was right by knowing that I'm dumb.
I was right on Georgia, and I was right on the all-time spot. Vanderbilt wasn't going to cover against Ball State, and Ball State was like tied with Vandy in like the fourth quarter of that game. I mean, it was the all-time weird sandwich spot, and I'm happy they won the game because that would have
and they're ranked now.
Yeah, they're ranked, and they need one win for a bowl game, and that's a team we are absolutely betting on in the bowl game.
Hell yes.
So, sandwich spots do exist, so that was one spot I certainly was accurate. Got some doozies, though, on some wrong ones.
Yeah, as we mentioned, both of us could not have been more wrong about Nebraska. I'm just going to straight up go, I really did not think that Alabama's offense was going to get held in check like it did. It's one thing for Alabama to lose, but then to not even get into the 20s, that really surprised me.
I thought Arkansas was going to win, and they did not. I really liked that spot. They were coming off a bye. I had talked myself into that one heavily. Like, Sam Pittman off a bye in a night game as a dog. And LSU went in there, and they snatched that golden boot from them with ease, man. So credit to LSU for that win. That was definitely a spot that, you know, the Indiana-Nebraska spot, I bet Nebraska, but like Arkansas-LSU, like I was in on Arkansas. I thought they were going to take care of business. And yeah, that was, you know, -3 in the turnover margin. I want to say, yeah, I knew it was bad when the first drive of the game, LSU scores, Arkansas goes right down the field, 42-yard field goal, and they missed. And I go, yep, I'm probably.
Yeah. The Nebraska one was one I just shouldn't have bet it. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't need to bet that.
I didn't love it, but I was like, I don't know. This seems like the peak of the market on Indiana. You know,
that would be this week, my friend. Indiana's about to be the new 2023 Arizona for me. I am getting that scalp. Somehow, some way, I'm getting that scalp.
Well, and Curtis Rourke's out.
I know. I think they're a different team without the Maple Missile. Everyone's like, well, they played fine after he got hurt. The game was over.
It is. It's pretty worth noting, you know, that we'll use Haynes King, for example. Haynes King, quarterback at Georgia Tech, he was out. The market moved about 6 points. The market's moved about 3 with Curtis Rourke being out here. Yeah, and got College Game Day there. I'll just say, Kirk Cignetti, last year, College Game Day, went to James Madison. They lost that game, the Dukes did.
It's the Cartman. You know what happened to the Patriots when they stopped cheating? They lost. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, let's get into the list. Let's get into some of that Monday Night Football. Take a look at the NBA. Jonathan Von Tobel is going to join us as well during hour number 2. Talk the NBA as well. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Tim, here's what I want to discuss with you because, I mean, Lamar borderline played perfect football last night. I mean, it was exceptional. But this is what I keep wondering. We see this really more NBA than we do in the NFL, but Lamar would be going for his 3rd MVP. Do you think it could get held against him what we've seen in the playoffs where multiple times we've given him the MVP only to get disappointed in the playoffs? Do you think that we could see this year where normally it's like, all right, go find the number 1 seed, find the quarterback, that's your MVP. If the Ravens, who right now look like they're playing about as good a ball as you can.
They're the best team in the NFL.
They feel like the most consistent, but then I always just have it in my head, like, it might be more dangerous. The fact that the Chiefs aren't really passing the eye test and they're 6-0, that could be a bigger problem.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, the Chiefs' defense is incredible.
But, the same idea, I also think the way Mahomes is playing, that even if the Chiefs are the number 1 overall seed, like, it almost feels like it's going to get held against Mahomes because his numbers have been meh.
Yeah, we did a thing last night on the show on VEASAN Primetime where my producer put up Bo Nix's stats and then had a, you know, who is this quarterback and his stats, and it was Patrick Mahomes. I mean, Patrick Mahomes' stat, he has more interceptions than touchdowns.
And I believe he leads the league, and I think it's him and Garner.
He was the co-favorite to win MVP going into last night, and then Lamar Jackson had his performance. They have a weird loss to the Raiders. I don't know how they lost that game. And they lost opening night to the Chiefs on the road where they had a touchdown pass where if it's, you know, Kevin Durant, you know, foot on the lawn type of deal when the Nets played the Bucks in 2021 in the postseason. So I am blown away at this offense. Rashad Bateman is now emerging as a stud wide receiver. It feels like every other game you're like, all right, what tight end is going to get a big play here for the Ravens? And then I know that, you know, people who own Derrick Henry in fantasy were like, well, he only has 4 carries in the first half.
He got you. He was saving up.
And it's like, don't worry, we got this cheat code, is the alien in the backfield that is going to run all over you late in a game. I think they're the best team in the NFL. I really do. They're, by the way, you know, we talked a lot about teams covering in college football, Indiana, Army, Navy, etc. Baltimore is now 6-1 to the over, so they put up your points and they get you there on some overs there. But they're impressive, man. And to answer your question, I hope it doesn't, because if he's truly the best player in the NFL, the postseason shouldn't matter. And you know, I'm sort of glad that the Dodgers eliminated the Mets, because I know we would have heard the stupid argument of, oh, yeah, Francisco Lindor's the real MVP. It's like, no, Shohei Ohtani is. And then he hits balls.
Is anyone saying that outside of New York?
Well, we have some New Yorkers on our staff, but, like, yeah, there are people trying to make the argument on
VSiN. It's like, we all watched the season. Shohei was the MVP.
What are we doing here? Like, what are we doing, you know? I mean, Grimace was the real MVP, and then they spit in his face and didn't invite him out for a first pitch, and he got eliminated.
Speaking of spitting, Hawk Tua could also have been one of their MVPs as well.
No doubt.
Also, in the midst of an outstanding performance, I got to give credit to my boy Baker. Baker put on a garbage time performance for the ages.
Couldn't get that back door, though.
No, but I was glad of that, because I did the yes. But, like, you know, sometimes, like, you know, you have to know when to be SpongeBob SquarePants. Lamar against the NFC, it's like, just go ahead and do it. Baker in the fourth quarter alone, if this would actually update, I believe he was, 17 of 24, 196 yards, 2 touchdowns. It's important to note, the start of the fourth quarter, the score was 34-10. That's the type of garbage time performance that you, like, you have to dig deep. That's Dak in the playoffs. You know, lose the game with 2 crippling interceptions, but put up numbers so that at the end of the game, everybody's like, Baker played fine. But the 2 interceptions were horrific.
Yeah, the interception in the end zone turned the game around. I mean, it was about to be 17-7, and he throws the pick in the end zone, and that game gets flipped on its head. Man, I tell you what, though. Whew. I don't know if there's any Buccaneer fans out there. My man. Whew. Mike Evans, hamstring. He's going to be out, I think, a minimum of 3 weeks. And then Chris Godwin dislocates his ankle. He's probably, I imagine, done for the year.
So man. the thing that was interesting to me about that moment, obviously it leads to the discussion of, should you be playing your guys when the game's decided? I can kind of go either way. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's football, man. It's like the bowl game thing where it's like, oh, and I feel awful for players from previous eras that got hurt in bowl games, like Jalen Smith or Jake Butt. And I know there's some others.
Well, I mean, obviously we always have Willis McGahee. Yeah.
But Willis McGahee was a national championship game.
What was he supposed to sit it out?
Right, and it's like, it's football. If he gets hurt the final game of the season as opposed to a bowl game, is it any different? So I know it's 41-31. Was the game over? I don't think so.
I mean, the reality was,
score a touchdown or kick a field goal, then you get an onside kick, and I know it's hard to get those, but I don't know.
The thing that I thought was actually more interesting about it was the next possession, or maybe it was before. Maybe it was the possession. No, you're right. No, it was the possession before, because that's how the Bucs got the ball back. Mm-hmm. I thought it was odd that I'm watching the Ravens put in their entire second unit with 2 minutes left, and the Bucs still had timeouts. They did not have their first offense on the field. I just thought it was striking to see the Ravens have their second offense on the field while the Bucs then go down the very next possession and Godwin gets hurt. But I'm in the camp of, I really hate when we sit there and we just go, what's he even doing on the field? It's like, it's like, yes, I mean, there's a risk of him being on the field, but it's like, how is that risk any different than any other time you're playing football?
And it gets into the discussion of, well, he should just sit out the rest of the year. It's like, people that are elite athletes, it's not all, like, they like to play the game. And I'm sure Chris Godwin is devastated that his ankle got dislocated yesterday.
I mean, there's also this thing that always gets left out of the discussion. I guarantee you Godwin in his contract has got a bunch of incentives, and that is, let's be real, going back to my Baker point, that's as hot as a guy's been in garbage time. Like, you can pick up a quick 60 yards and a score. You know what I mean? Like, and maybe you look back at the end of the season and those numbers lead to like another $1 million or $2 million bonus.
Yeah. No, you're right.
All right, now the other thing we got to get to. Our boy Herbert is absolutely cooking in the red zone. There's not a check down my guy won't hit when he's got to go score a touchdown. I did also think Harbaugh was going to. I thought he was. We talk about Mora going after the officials. I actually thought Harbaugh was going to murder the officials last night.
Yeah, that was he was pretty heated. He was pretty fired up.
I mean, that one was unbelievable. Also, the play, was it James Conner? Who made the play on the tip ball that gets picked where Chargers, you get a big man interception, they strip it, get the ball back, they keep the Chargers, and then Jalen Reagor just doing Jalen Reagor things. His ability to make losing football plays knows no bounds.
And if the dude just steps out of bounds,
yes,
you keep the possession. But instead, he tight ropes the sideline and then boom, knocked out.
It's like even when he makes an incredible play, he still finds a way.
Yeah, yeah, that was pretty tough there. I had the Cardinals.
I did. I was like,
cool. This is great.
Yeah, no, I was too. I was like, oh yeah, this is how the Chargers do it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because my partner on Veatson Primetime, Matt Humans, has a significant wager on the Chargers over their win total, which is 8.5. And if they had gotten that yesterday, like, they were assuredly going to get there. And at one point, it looked like it was going to be 15-14. And I'm like, great, you win, I cover, perfect. And then the Chargers. I'm trying to remember.
So, because I did the move of, did you have a point and a half? What'd you have?
So in the, I had 2.5.
So you got it super early.
So full disclosure, I play, there are contests here in Vegas, the Super Contest, the Westgate, Circa Millions, they're pick'em contests. So it's a stale line. So those lines get locked in on Thursday. So when I saw the line move as much as it did, I took the Cardinals at 2.5 in the contest.
Okay, so you had this scenario where it was 1.5 when I took it, and I was like, screw it. If I lose by one, whatever.
Oh, money line, yeah.
Yeah, I just went money line. I got a little bit of a plus sign. And then the game is shaping up to where Peyton and Eli are talking about with Scott Hansen on the Manning cast about eating the clock. And Hansen looks at Peyton. He's like, Peyton, there's like 8 minutes left. Like, how are they going to eat up this much clock? Lo and behold, if they could have gotten one more first down, they basically could have eaten the clock. They got it down to the 2-minute warning and then left Arizona some time. But they're only about a yard and a half away from eating up the whole clock. So shout out to Harbaugh for really managing the clock. But with about 5 minutes left and you realize, like, oh my God, they're going to kick a field goal and they're going to win by a point and you're going to be an idiot. You could have had a winner and instead you're going to have a loser. That was quite demoralizing. That feeling of just knowing certain death, like, that only comes from having gambled on the NFL for like decades. Like, when you just, there's a moment in time when you know that your ticket is just, you might as well just light it on fire. I very much had that during that drive.
So another thing too, moving forward, there may not be someone who loves field goals more than Jim Harbaugh.
Oh no, there's go for three, baby.
Cameron Dicker.
Listen, I mean, no one will ever accuse him of leaving points out there.
No. Dicker the kicker is he's also automatic. Like, what, that must be such a great feeling to just step out there. You're like, I'll make this. Like, 59 yards, I'm good. I'm gonna make it. Like, just to know that you're gonna make every single kick.
Well, I mean, it's like, I don't, what do you think it's like to be Brandon Autry? Dude does that from 60.
Except when it's important to some.
Yeah, well, but it was too short. I think that was sub 40.
I think it was, yeah.
It was like, that's the thing. Because I remember, I think his first kick in the NFL was an extra point, and I think he missed it. And then in the same game, he made one from like 60-something. You're like, oh, it was too close. Well, it changes off his angles. He's not used to kicking things that short. Also, right quickly before we get to JVT, Cooper Kupp. All right, so there's something that's kind of annoying me recently, and I think it really started with Xavier Worthy at the draft. So the Rams reportedly have at least put Cooper Kupp on the trading block. Very lukewarm. And you never know how these things are. This could easily have been someone called and said, hey, is Cooper Kupp available? And the Rams were like, I don't know, what are you going to give us? Like, we'll listen. you never know like how serious it wasn't. We don't know for a fact if the Rams were the ones shopping him or if people were calling inquiring. But I am so sick of every time that we hear a receiver is on the market, everyone immediately going, oh my God, the Chiefs are getting him. Chiefs are getting him. So he's going to the Chiefs. They're just going to give him the Super Bowl. And maybe Cooper Kupp is the one that winds up at the Chiefs, but it's like, eventually it's just kind of like a broken clock's right twice a day. You know what I mean? Like it's eventually someone is going to be right. The Chiefs are going to make a move for someone, but I am just getting so annoyed that every time a receiver's on the market, we all just panic and say the Chiefs are getting him.
Yeah, of course. I mean, they get everyone, even though they don't.
I think the Chiefs have cut more receivers than they've acquired this year.
Yeah, no, you're right. And they also, I mean, they actually do need a receiver, but I don't know. I never know, like.
Do they, or does Kelce just need to find out whatever that special sauce he was on after the Miami playoff game? Because that looked like a different human being.
He'll get it later.
Oh no, he'll find it. Come, maybe if they have to play wild card weekend, maybe he plays it again the same way. Like you know, but divisional weekend, I imagine he'll find the secret sauce. yeah, here we go. It's Kansas City Chargers. Okay, that's fine. You know, flank lad on one side with Cooper Kupp on the other. Really lean into Michigan football.
I mean they got two awesome tackles. Give the ball to J.K. Dobbins and let's go.
That's some Big Ten. All right, let's talk the NBA. We'll do it with Tim's co-host, Jonathan Von Tobel. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
ESPN. Jonathan Von Tobel is the senior NBA betting analyst for VSiN, also Tim's co-host of VSiN Primetime, kind enough to join us to preview the NBA season. You can follow him on Twitter on X at MeJVT. I guess, JVT, let's start with why you like the Grizzlies this season. Tim told me that was one of your early bets when you saw it hit the board. You took the Grizzlies over on the win total. Why do you like the Grizzlies this year?
Well, actually, a small correction. I bet the Grizzlies to win the finals when that hit the board. But I will also admit that I did cash out probably like a month later.
Yeah, that was probably wise.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Like, I mean, I'm sure I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know. I'm a little worried about some of the things with Memphis. Like, I think there's some things to like about them. Obviously, they're healthy this year. We haven't seen the full version of everything with Marcus Smart and with John Morant. And obviously, a new assistant coach is going to change the offense. There's a lot of positive things that are there. But some of the negatives are, first and foremost, as you guys know, health. Jaren Jackson Jr. is already beat up. John Morant with that reoccurring, I think it's a wrist injury, right, that he's dealing with.
We've moved down to the ankle again.
Oh, ankle. Sorry. Yeah. There. So, like,
it's an easy mistake.
Yeah. So it's there's a lot going on there, and that worries me. I also don't know if they're going to be a good three-point shooting team. I think that kind of worries me a little bit as well when you look at the roster as a whole. Not that I think they're going to be terrible or miss the playoffs, but my overwhelming enthusiasm about a team whose season last year was derailed completely by injury was tempered a little bit the more I looked into the team and the more I watched them. So I'm not all in as I thought, but I am very excited to see what they're going to be because I hope I'm wrong because I do think there's a lot of potential there.
Jonathan Von Tobel from VSiN. You can catch him weeknights at 6 p.m. Central Time at MeJVT and also check out the VSiN NBA betting guide, which is available over at VSiN.com. JVT, a critical part of that. JVT, we get the news today that both Paul George and Joel Embiid will miss the season opener for the Philadelphia 76ers, and it feels like, oh no, here we go again. What do you make of this Sixers team heading into this year where we're already seeing the injuries pop up here?
Well, and that's the thing, though, Tim. Like, is Joel Embiid injured? Because we haven't seen anything, right?
He played the whole damn Olympics, like, right?
Right.
Well, and then, like today he's saying, like, I'm just going to, like, not play as much, which is like, okay, what does that mean?
Yeah, so like that's the thing that I think is perplexing here is there was no real injury. As you mentioned, he played in the Olympics, and he didn't play in the preseason, and now he's not ready for whatever it is for opening night. Like, that is troublesome. Are they hiding something? Did he undergo some procedure? I like don't think that's the case. So they're just sitting him out because he's just not in shape. It's not a great sign regardless. And then, you know, Paul George. Like, Paul George can't catch a break because it's always injuries like that, right? Going back on defense and just hyperextending his knee because he gets caught on the floor, like, it sucks for him. But I think that's ultimately where you get to is playing under their win total. Like, they have a win total contest out here at the Superbook, and I went under on Philly's win total because I think when you look, if you tell me everybody's healthy, you tell me everybody's available, I think this team's better than New York. I think they're the second-best team in the Eastern Conference. But from a win total standpoint, from an availability standpoint, you've seen nothing in either one of their stars' histories that would tell you they're going to be available to the level that they are going to be worth betting over their win total. I think they're deep, I think they're sturdy, and I think they're going to be one of the best teams. Their three stars, I think, fit beautifully together, right? You're talking about a star guard, a star wing, and a star center. That's awesome. But I think from a win total standpoint, you have no choice but to go under because of the availability and the willingness by the team to already announce Embiid's not playing back-to-backs. He's not going to go for the MVP. It's all about missing time to get healthy and ready to go for the postseason.
Well, this is something that Tim and I have discussed throughout the last couple of years. Anecdotally, or maybe I'm projecting, it feels like we are focusing on injuries and the impact that they have had on the standings, the playoffs, more than ever. Is that actually true that it has increased, or is this maybe just we have more information and so, or maybe we're just projecting, or it's like recency bias? But it does feel like so much of the NBA the past few seasons has been defined by injuries. Is that a normal thing, or is this a different point in time?
No, I think that it's probably, you know, without any hard data to back it up, it does seem anecdotal. And it's also when the injuries occur, right? Like, right. So for example, you know, you look at the Eastern Conference playoffs and the fact that everybody around Boston was falling apart, right? Every single team was suffering some sort of injury that ultimately led, and I think the result would have been the same either way, but ultimately leading to the Indiana Pacers and the Boston Celtics and making a deep run there, and we know what happened from that point on, right? So I do think that injuries have shaped the way these postseasons have occurred, and they've come at very impactful times. Like, look, I'm a Clippers fan, right? I can tell you. I can rattle off the years in which a playoff run has ended too early for Los Angeles in the Kawhi Leonard, Paul George era because of injuries suffered either right before the postseason or during a postseason series. So I would say that there are probably some impactful ones. And you look at it, the teams that make it the farthest are generally the teams with the cleanest bills of health. And I think that's probably what we're looking at. So I don't know if it's really altered many championships outside of, we can go back to Toronto, right, when Kevin Durant tears his Achilles. But I think for the most part, it shapes maybe some of the path and how we got there, but not the entirety of it, if that makes sense.
JVT, a team that is no doubt going to be on a lot of people's minds is the San Antonio Spurs, with Victor Wembanyama entering year two, wins Rookie of the Year last year. A lot of discussion, at least in our world, the gambling world, whether or not he should have won Defensive Player of the Year. He shouldn't have, but regardless. Their win total sits at 36.5. Just to remind folks, they went 22-60 last year. So I've seen a lot of people say, oh, they're definitely going over their win total. They're making the playoffs. I mean, did this team, outside of having Victor Wembanyama, get that much better this offseason?
No, they didn't. And I've added, so that was, I think, my sixth win total, my final win total I added, under 36.5 for San Antonio. I don't really see it. Look, your two big additions are, of course, Chris Paul and Harrison Barnes. Chris Paul had the worst shooting season in terms of accuracy he's ever had, whether it's field goal percentage, whether it is points per 100 shot attempts, just pure points per game. It was one of his worst offensive seasons outside of, again, being a very good facilitator. So you're going to have that. But he doesn't really add that much. From a defensive standpoint and an offensive standpoint, Harrison Barnes was a massive negative for the Sacramento Kings last year when he was on the floor. There's a reason why these two are available for this team. I don't see that this team and the upgrades that they have made are going to be a team that adds, what are we talking about here, 16 wins, 15 wins to their win total from last year. And remember, Devin Vassell gets injured, so like that's a pretty big deal too. I think that's kind of where I'm at, Tim, where this team is really overvalued. It's not because of one guy, right? Victor Wembanyama is 20-1 to an MVP. He is the odds-on favorite to win Defensive Player of the Year. He is favored to win Most Improved Player of the Year. This team is way overvalued because of Wembanyama's presence. And I would just say this. If you think that the Spurs are going over that win total of 36.5. I'd much rather put it in 20-1 on Wembanyama to win MVP, because it would take that type of a season from him for that to transpire. I don't think it's a realistic case that this team goes over that win total. So I went under 36.5.
We're talking with Jonathan Von Tobel of VSiN, kind enough to preview the NBA with us. JVT, obviously for most fans here, we're focused on the West. And the thing that stands out to me, and my buddy Chris Harrington, who does a great job covering the Grizzlies, there's going to be at least one, if not more, teams that come into the year thinking they have a chance to be a legitimate playoff team in the West. I'm not saying that they have aspirations of winning the West, but they think that they can avoid the play-in. It's likely at least one of those teams, if not two, are going to be completely outside of the play-in. When you stack up the West, like, how do you kind of start to sort it out as we start the season?
So I think generally your top teams are who they're going to be, right? Like Oklahoma City, I absolutely love. They are the best team in the Western Conference. I don't think there's really any question about that. I love the addition of Mike Budenholzer and the additions that this roster made for Phoenix. I think they're going to find themselves inside of the top six. I think Dallas is going to be a top six team, although I think people will be surprised at least to hear that I think they're going to be closer to six than they are to one. I think there's some real flaws with the roster overall. And I think you're kind of going from there. Denver should solidly be in the top six, but again, a team that I think is going to be competing more for like six than we're talking about for a top team. Again, Minnesota, absolutely love, should find themselves in the top three. You know, that's six teams already. And then you get to the middle of the Western Conference where you're talking about teams like the Los Angeles Lakers, the Golden State Warriors, the Houston Rockets, like all of these squads that maybe fancy themselves as playoff squads and ultimately maybe won't be able to make it into the top six. New Orleans, I think, is absolutely fascinating. They might call you to come and play center for them at some point, but the rest of their roster is absolutely great. So I don't know what I want to do with them, but they're a team that needs to find themselves at a crowded top 10. So I would say this. I think of the teams that might surprise some that would find themselves on the outside looking in, I think Sacramento would be one of them. I think obviously the Clippers, the Lakers could be one as well. But focusing on Sacramento, I just don't really love the fit. There's not a ton of knockdown, catch-and-shoot threat on that roster and on that starting five, especially when you have De'Aaron Fox and DeMar DeRozan out there together. That spacing is going to be an issue with them and Sabonis. Keon Ellis and Keegan Murray, your best knockdown shooting threats, that's not the best thing you want to go to war with into a season. I think out of everything, right, and when you move all the pieces around, the team that kind of ultimately finds itself maybe on the outside looking in would be a team like Sacramento. And as mentioned already, I did get a little worried about Memphis, but I think they're more of like that 6-5 range as opposed to all the way outside of the top 10.
JVT, in the Eastern Conference, we know the Celtics, defending champs, rosters loaded. Who, when you look around, we talked about the Sixers a little bit, Knicks go out and make the trade for Karl Anthony Towns, which I know you weren't the biggest fan of that move, trading DiVincenzo and Randall. The Bucks, can they stay healthy? We've already seen the Middleton news that he's going to be out a little bit here. Who, in your mind, gives Boston the biggest threat in the East?
Yeah, I think it's, as I've said a couple of times and asked this question, Tim, I always say 2.5 teams, right? It's New York, it's Philly, and it's Milwaukee as like the half team. And again, not really in that order, but Milwaukee is the most fascinating one. Just look at it from a pure odds standpoint. This team, pretty much as constructed right now, heading into last year, was 4-1 to win the finals, right? This team was, odds-wise, one of the shortest shots on the board, and now you're looking at the range of about 14-1 to win the NBA Finals. They're very much slept on from that standpoint. And if all of a sudden, God forbid, they start to get it together, they know what they want to do defensively with Damian Lillard on the floor, kind of being a little bit of a weak link there, and all of a sudden figure it out and rise in terms of their defensive rating, they're still going to be one of the best offensive teams. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if we're looking up, you know, in the end of this season when we're talking about that March range where, oh, hey, Milwaukee's competing for like a top two seed along with Boston, and they're all of a sudden running through this regular season, and Giannis Antetokounmpo is having one of his MVP-type years. I don't think that would be shocking, but if we're talking about like pure order for me, it would have to be Philly if fully healthy, and maybe New York and then Milwaukee as it stands right now. But you mentioned it. The Knicks' depth concerns, I mean, it's an issue. Their top two backup centers are already out. What's going to happen when Karl Anthony Towns isn't on the floor? Who's their primary backup point guard? Campaign's going to take those minutes? Deuce McBride? I have real big worries about what this bench looks like for the Knicks.
All right, we're wrapping up here with JVT. JVT, I think we should always leave room for greatness. And LeBron was able to get his son drafted and get him on the main roster. Should we really rule out that he can't buy at least his way to a Rookie of the Year as well?
yes. I like LeBron is powerful. I don't think he's that powerful.
But should we leave room for greatness?
Yeah. I will say, I mean, to the point, though, there is no real standout rookie of the year candidate right now.
Zach Edey!
Yeah, I was going to say, Zach Edey, as you guys know, has lost some weight. He's looked great. I'm seeing him complete lobs and stuff. Like, the guy looks way better than, at least more springy and athletic than he did in college. And he's going to have a massive role, as you guys know. So he is the rightful favorite at this point right now. But outside of him, I mean, look, you could talk me into any one rookie that's really going to have some pretty big roles for their respective teams. So I'm very excited to see how the race shakes out. But I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'll book somebody. You know, I'll give them up to 2,000 to 1. I'll book it on LeBron. LeBron James, to win Rookie of the Year.
I'm so mad that they're inviting the Griffies. Because you know exactly what they're doing.
Oh, they are? I did not know that.
LeBron's doing the move of, he heard the narrative like, this isn't like the Griffies, where Junior deserved to be in Major League Baseball. It's like, I'm going to invite the Griffies, and they're going to like crown this. Like, they're going to give it their blessing. It's like Hogan putting dust on the Ultimate Warrior. Like, oh, yuck, yuck, yuck.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about this. Like, I was asked this morning on our morning show. It's like, aren't you into this? And I'm like, not really. Feels like artificial and not real. And I don't know why I'm being told by many, the mainstream media, to feel great about this. Like, it doesn't feel like something we should be all warm and fuzzy about.
This is what the LeBron machine does. They artificially, like, manipulate something to happen, and then they start pointing the finger at you. If you sit there and go, hey, man, if he wanted to play with his son, that's cool. There's lots of people that give their sons jobs. Like, whatever, this is America. Like, that's the way it works. Like, I don't think it should happen in sports, but fine, I get it. But if you just take that position, you're all of a sudden like, oh, so you just hate family stories. Like, no, that's just not what this is. This was him announcing.
Let's not pretend that Thanasis deserved to be on the Bucks roster, okay?
Right, exactly.
Oh, no, but to that point, though, Tim, like, Thanasis was not getting things planned for him.
Oh,
right.
I agree. No, I think
we're planning to get Bronny in the game. Like, that's
yeah. I'm kind of in the middle here, where I'm like, whatever, man. If he wants to be the 15th man on the Lakers roster, who cares? No one knows who that guy is, anyways. But if we're going to artificially put him in games, yeah, that seems like a bridge too far.
JVT, we appreciate it, buddy. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, you got it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Jonathan Von Tobel. When we come back, we tell your story next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM. All right, Tim, for today's Tell Your Story, we got to go to Aaron Rodgers. Appearing today on the McAfee Show, Aaron has pinpointed what's wrong with the Jets. Tim, the Jets are playing with too much anger and not enough enjoyment. The power of belief is a snowball that can start in an avalanche, and I think that's what we need. It starts with me. I've got to bring the right energy every single day, especially on game day. I don't know about you, but from what I saw on Sunday night, that was the opposite of anger. I saw Q-U-I-T. I saw quit, not anger.
Don't hate it. Don't hate it.
It's a good spin zone. That's a good tell your story. I want to thank Jonathan Von Tobel for joining the program. If you missed anything, be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, Dennis, for Tim, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.